Will you join with me in the singing of our national anthem?
Ladies and gentlemen,
the President, Dr. Robert I. White.
Friends from off campus, on the first of what I hope are not too many warm days in May, we are honored indeed by Vice President Hubert Humphrey's acceptance of the invitation to visit Kent State University. Born in South Dakota, he did his baccalaureate work at the University of Minnesota, and for a time served on the faculty at the University of Minnesota. In addition, he has a master's degree in political science. After two terms as mayor of Minneapolis, he was three times elected to the United States Senate, and in 1964 elected Vice President of the United States. In addition to his constitutional duties, plus membership on the Cabinet and National Security Council, he coordinates today the federal government efforts in poverty, in civil rights, and in the Youth Council, as well as serving as chairman of the National Aeronautics and Space Council. From his legislative history, you and others will remember him for his efforts in Medicare, the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, the Job Corps, the new Cabinet Department of Housing and Urban Development, the National Councils for the Arts and the Humanities, Food for Peace, and the Civil Rights Act of 1964. He is a great public servant, a vigorous force in our national life, an insistent voice on issues which should not and will not be down an American. I am honored to present to you the Vice President of the United States of America.
Mr. President, that's generally the way I start out anything I have to say these days. President White, Dr. Harris, and members of this distinguished student panel, president of the student body, the students and faculty of Kent State University. I want to say if I can get half as much applause and one half as warm a reception at the Democratic National Convention as I got here today, I'm in. I want to thank you Republicans, too. Just keep doing it, even at the Democratic National Convention. Now, ordinarily, I'd never made a statement like that. Because when I accepted this wonderful invitation to come to this fine university, my heart was pure, my intentions were unknown. And my ambitions were curbed. But since that time, things have happened. Many, many things have happened. Oh, I could be, well, I don't think I'll recite all the things that have happened since that time. But let's just put it this way. Since that time, I've had the chance to reappraise my position. And here I am. Here I am at the second largest state university in Ohio. Here I am in the 26th largest university in the United States of America. Here I am introduced by one of the greatest university administrators and scholars in America, your own President White. And you'll never know how happy I am just to be I am. You know, you used to say it was pretty hard for a vice president to get an invitation to go anyplace. And I understand that the student body here had quite a discussion, the student governing body, and they had a vote, and finally they decided they'd extend me an invitation. They were running out of speakers. It's sort of like that fellow that was manager of one of your local industries here that was taken ill, and he went off to the hospital. He was there a week, and nobody even wrote to him. He was there another 3 days, and he didn't even get a card. He was there in the second week, and he hadn't had a caller. And finally, the executive board of the local union got together and decided to consider the condition of the boss. And they had quite an argument, like we're prone to do these days. And after 2 or 3 hours' discussion, they passed the following resolution. The executive council of Local 100, after due consideration, has adopted the following resolution. We hereby move by a vote of 8-7 that we wish you a speedy recovery. Now, I was told that that's about the way it was. But I sure want to thank you for all the 8 that came out today. It looks good to me. I understand, too, that I've arrived hard on the heels of a mock Republican convention. I'm sure happy that the air is so pure today. It does seem better. You know, calling a Republican convention a mock convention seems a little redundant. But then, so does the Rockefeller Percy ticket that you nominated. That's both, by the way, fine gentlemen. Very fine gentlemen. Both of them doing wonderful work in their present jobs. And I see no reason interrupting a thing that is going so beautifully. Now, my friends, I'm going to say just a few words of what I hope is some serious note to you, and then I think that's a good idea. You know, I have a few people spotted in the audience. He clapped the wrong time. But I want this meeting to be primarily a period in which questions can come from this panel, and if we have some time, I'd like to see them come from this floor. I know one thing, that this panel is just anxiously awaiting to take their first bite at a live vice president. Say what you will, I am that. Now, this is a very, very sobering and challenging time in the American academic community. I'm interested in the American academic community for many reasons. First, as was indicated by your president, I am in a very real sense a refugee from a classroom. I have been both student and teacher, both graduate student and professor. I have always taken a great interest, as I'm sure many others in this audience have, in the development of our educational structure, in excellence in education. We've just experienced some very trying and sometimes tormented days on university campuses across this country. And some are still in the grip of violent unrest and protest. I want to particularly commend this student body, knowing that there are many varied points of view here, knowing that this campus is recognized for its full academic freedom, knowing that the... Oh, yes, you are. The word has gotten to us. And knowing that President White has encouraged the fullest discussion, the fullest dialogue of every issue. I think we need to know and ask ourselves, what is happening across the campuses? Well, one thing, of course, that has happened that is very good is that students are asking university administrators and faculty to work with them as partners, to work with them in building curricula, to work with them in trying to make education relevant to our needs and our times. I think this is highly commendable. I do believe that many a student has been disappointed in some of our great and large universities because they've never had the chance to come in contact with those men and women of the faculty that they were led to believe were the great ones, the gifted ones. And might I say to my friends of the faculty, and I'm apt to be back there with you, you can't tell, life is uncertain. I'm not planning it that way, but it could be. And President White, I'd like to leave a copy of my credentials with you just in case as I go out here today. But could I say that I think those of us that have been faculty members and are gain a great deal from our dialogue and our communication with our students. I find this to be very necessary, may I say now, in our youth opportunity program where we work with the militants, not work on them, but work with them, not ignore them, but ask them to participate. This is one of the reasons in the earlier days, at least, for student action. To understand a little more about the action and the protest of students, we need to look back to the civil rights protests of the early 1960s, when students began to take a much more active interest in political, social, and economic issues. In fact, I think it's fair to say that we wouldn't be as far along as we are today in the basic law of this nation relating to full protection of civil rights were it not for student action. These students began responding to the needs and the problems of the hour. They were no longer content with education composed of alternating periods of idle amusement and secluded study. I'm one of those teachers that believes that a university ought to be a scene of action, not just a meadow of meditation. I believe the greatest laboratory is at our fingertips, the community in which we live and work. And this is particularly true for a liberal arts university, and particularly true for those of us that are in the field of the humanities and the social sciences. Students began taking direct action in the cause of human freedom, dignity, and justice in what we call the sit-ins and the freedom rides. And the current, that current is still clearly with us. I recently noted, for example, that a program which I'm very close to called VISTA, Volunteers in Service to America, that program today has an all-time record of volunteers. I think it should be spread also upon the public record that there are literally hundreds of thousands of college students today that are working in the ghettos of our inner cities that are helping deprived young people gain a better understanding. I was at the Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia just last week, and I said to that student body what I'm going to say to you. Look, anybody that's got enough energy and get up and go to demonstrate for whatever cause it may be has got enough energy, get up and go to volunteer some of your time to help a needy person, to help somebody stand on their own feet. I want you in your own way to find how you can best do it. I've talked to my young friends in fraternities and sororities and the clubs of the universities, and I've said, look, why don't you just get together and instead of having Hell Week, why don't you have Help Week? Help somebody. We desperately need young men and women today to help supervise playgrounds, to work in settlement houses, to carry on tutorial courses, to do 1,001 things. And I'll tell you the only answer that I know in America to the bitterness and the frustration and the hate that is found in far too many places is for some of us who've had a better break in life to show that we care, that we're concerned, that the principle of love is not just a word, it works, and we ought to do something about expressing it in our own way. Now, these earlier examples of student power, including everything that's happened around our campuses from Berkeley on, were, I think, affirmative protests directed against long-standing social and economic injustices and inequities. Young people today who have it better than some young people have had it before know that there's something wrong in this country. They know that. And I'm one of those that believes, that if you know it, the thing to do is not to shout about it and talk about it, but the thing to do is to go to work and help people amount to something in this country. The more recent disruptions, such as we've read about in some of our large metropolitan press, have been characterized by a disturbing sense of negativism, an indiscriminate striking out against everyone and anybody, all striking out against all order, both within the university and the society at large. And I can think of one city now in which there is active student protest by a minority. A city that is cursed by slumism, and any student that has the get up and go to make trouble for a university president or a university itself ought to have enough courage, enough decency to go on out and help a poor kid get a break in life. That's what he ought to be doing. it's a sad day when a college campus has to portray the picture of brawling students with police. A sad day. Universities ought to do better than that. Universities ought to set the example for a better society. Students that are privileged to go to a great university ought to set that example. And you don't set the example by proving yourself to be a bully in the streets. You set the example by extending the helping hand, by volunteering, by trying to do something about the problems that are close at hand, by seeing to it that somebody gets an education, by helping that person through school, by going in and helping to clean up the slums, by being a good citizen. And I've sensed it across this country that university students want to do this, and I'm going to go around this nation and ask them to help. I want to convert what is student power into positive student social justice for people today who are the victims of injustice. And we can do it, my friends, if we bear down on it. Well, now I'm not going to, I've got a lot more written out here, and all my friends of the press, every word I've said, that's for you. And I'm not going to take any more of their time. I know that the problem of the proper role of students and faculty, defining that is difficult. I know that free men have always struggled to find the proper balance between the impulse towards individualism and the maintenance of social order. I can just say this, that if this country, if this nation with better than 170 years of freedom, if this nation hasn't learned how to redress its grievances through the democratic processes, if we haven't learned how to promote change with order and to have order with change, then there's very little hope for anybody else. This is a nation that has been fortunate in its democratic institutions and their growth. A nation that is fortunate in its economy. A nation this year that produced 40% of all the production of the world. A nation this year that has known unparalleled prosperity. Now, if we can't do something with our wealth, with our science, with our universities, with our know-how, if we can't do something to adjust the difficulties and the inequities within a framework of law and order, and yet social progress, and positive social progress, then what makes you think that there's much hope for the people of other parts of the world that have had such little experience and have so little to do with? So I come to ask young Americans to remember that while you are the inheritors of a great nation and a great heritage, that those who inherit and only exploit their inheritance are unworthy of it. But those who inherit, whether it's wealth or a good name or a good country, those who inherit that and build on it, add to it, develop it, redesign it, revitalize it, those who do that are the real patriots of America. That's the kind of patriotism that we need in this country. Not just the patriotism which we need above, of course, the patriotism to country and flag, but the patriotism of hard, difficult, patient work to make a better America, to see to it that those who have too little have a chance to have enough, to see that those who have been left out of American life are brought in, to see to it that democracy is not just government for the people, but it's government of the people and by the people, where the least of these, where every person, regardless of race, creed, or color, has a chance to be an active participant in the full expression of democratic freedom. Now let's turn to the low-budget Meet the Press here. I don't know who the Larry Spivak is over here. Which one is the meanest? But Go right ahead. Dr. Harris, I know that you're a kind man. I want to turn it over to you. He's a tough grader, but he's a kind man.
I hope, Mr. Vice President, that you understand that when we raise these questions, we don't mean to create an embarrassing situation, but we're trying to get the story.
Oh, I've gone through this before. May I say, I understand it, but it does get embarrassing.
My first question, I think, would pertain to the nature.
Should probably explain the noise that you're hearing. It's the crowd booing about 12 people who have just walked out.
Last time anybody walked out on me, it was when I pleaded for civil rights in 1948 in the Philadelphia Convention.
The interpretation of that remark is found in the fact that the students who walked out were Negro. The figure of those walking out has swelled considerably from the 12 that we said earlier. We probably have about 25, 30, maybe 40 who have left the gym, at least the part of it that we can see. Not able to identify specifically what this group might be. Point, it's a little difficult to tell exactly where this protest is centered. We do have a great deal of activity here as the Secret Service and the various law enforcement officials are moving toward the middle and the back of the auditorium. The Vice President is standing at the podium
now for a while.
Very patiently. Vast majority of the crowd with him, and apparently we're about to resume the speech after that. I'm told that the protest centered around the draft.
My dear friends, we were just testing the exits. They work on both ends of the hall.
As soon as we can tell what this latest uproar is about, most of the crowd here is pretty enthusiastic about something, and our men are attempting to discover exactly what it is.
Apparently, I can gather, letting more people in for the others that left. Letting more people in. They're outside,
you know,
waiting to get in.
Student action, but I guess I must have overemphasized it. I do want to welcome our young friends that came in to fill the vacant seats. And I say with a real note of sadness and sincerity, I always feel badly when someone has a mind so closed that all they want to do is walk out of an open door.